The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Stealing some of my stories, Howard. Here I was saving up things for Tu B'Av, and here you're breaking them already, even before Tisha B'Av. You know, in the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, we've got to be careful about what we talk about. You know, we want to be...
Yeah, yes, I've already got hell for some
of
the...
mind. But here you are being all Tu B'Av-y.
Right.
Blue ticks, I think that blue ticks from your son is a very big deal. The fact that you didn't get an answer, it doesn't mean anything. The fact that you're being blue-ticked, however, is more than most of us get from our kids.
Yeah, but I think the message is very clear. Dad, stay out of this one. Exactly, exactly right. A group of 41 Democratic members of the U.S. Congress are currently on a visit to Israel. 41 Democratic members.
This is, I was surprised as well. Apparently it comprises 17.5% of the House Democrats currently serving in the USA. And this is a trip which happens every second year, because what happens is that they try not to do it during election years. And of course, next year will be an election year, the presidential election. And then during the presidential period after 2 years, there are, of course, elections for the various houses, in the USA. So this is a trip that's done, and has been done every second year. It's, sponsored by a charity that's affiliated to AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is, of course, a very active organization, pro-Israel organization in the United States. And they this time succeeded in convincing 41 Democrats to visit Israel, which is very surprising, particularly when you consider the effort that was made to try to convince these people not to come to Israel. And we know that the Democratic Party have quite a few anti-Israeli activists amongst them, including Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, and of course Alexandria Cortez. All of these people were very active in trying to convince the Democrats on the trip not to come. And apparently there was even a Twitter hashtag called hashtag skip the trip, where they were trying to convince the members of Congress not to take up on this offer of the trip to Israel. But the fact is that 41 of them have arrived, and I think that that's an amazing achievement, particularly when we think that the Democratic Party is kind of the party in the U.S. Congress that doesn't support Israel, because so much effort is put towards the Republicans, with President Trump being in the White House, and the Republican support that we seem to get, Israel seems to get within the various channels of government in the USA, that we kind of forget that there is actually a fairly substantial body of support even within the Democratic Party. And I think that to some degree we saw that when this anti-BDS legislation was introduced in the House last month, and it was a carried anti-BDS legislation that was carried by the House by a majority of 398-17. So out of those 17, 16 were Democrats who tried to oppose the anti-BDS bill. And this was 16 out of 235 Democrats in the House. So what this is suggesting is that even within the Democratic Party, which is traditionally being put up as the party that doesn't really support Israel, and of course during the Obama presidency, a lot of the things that Obama did, which were considered to be very contrary to Israel's best interests, were also labeled as kind of policies that were formulated from within the Democratic Party. And yet, you know, I think there is a surprising amount of support for Israel coming out of the Democratic Party, and we've got to be really grateful for that. I mean, a lot of good work is being done by some members of the Democratic Party who are really convincing people to support Israel. And of course, they met with President Ruvi Rivlin, and they have access to senior leaders. But I think there's still a view that Israel is so focused on supporting the Trump administration and so focused on supporting the Republican Party that sometimes these pro-Israeli Democrats kind of get forgotten in the mix.
Very, very interesting indeed. And Clive wants to know if Bernie Sanders is one of them. I assume not. Interesting that that the Democrats were anti this. I mean, when we've got a few of them saying that they actually are coming to Israel, the ones, some of the ones that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a clear caucus of Democratic Congress people, particularly the three names that I mentioned, who are very virulently anti-Israel and even some would say anti-Semitic. And, you know, they have chosen some quite interesting things to put out in the public domain. They're very supportive of the BDS and in, you know, of BDS activities. And, of course, continuously refer to Israel as apartheid Israel. They also used the term the 2019 AIPAC junket to apartheid Israel. That was the term that they used to describe this trip that the Democratic Congress people are on. So they clearly have a certain agenda that they are following, and they do it with huge amounts of energy and with vicious venom, anti-Israeli and to some degree also anti-Semitic, because it becomes very, very difficult to separate the two at times. But certainly some anti-Semitic, things being mentioned by them. So, you know, those three, in particular are the ones that we follow, but there are some others as well, who are very, you know, virulently anti-Israel.
Very interesting indeed. An Israeli court has ordered the body of a young girl to be exhumed. She was murdered in 1982, and her murder was never solved. That has new information come to light. Why has this happened?
Well, this is a story about the murder of Nava Elimelech, who, as you said, was murdered back in 1982. And she lived with her family in Bat Yam, just south of Tel Aviv. And she went from her parents' home one day in March, and she just never arrived at her destination. And of course, in Israel, it's very common for girls even of that age to leave home and to go on their own to wherever they want to go. They go walking or using public transport. So nothing would have been considered to be unusual about the fact that she went from her parents' home, but she just never arrived at her destination, completely disappeared. And then in the weeks following that, some bags were washed up from the Mediterranean Sea that actually contained parts of her body. So her body was actually dismembered, and bits of it were found in the sea, were washed up from the sea. And until this day, the police don't have a proper explanation of exactly what happened to her, even though a special investigative team was set up to search for her killers. And in the end, a year later, back in 1983, the police announced that they had reached a dead end, and they had absolutely no idea what happened to her. And then in 1998, there were two brothers who were arrested in this particular case, but there wasn't sufficient evidence to hold them, and so they were therefore released. But then a new storyline emerged where the motive may have actually been a terror attack rather than some sort of a criminal attack. And apparently the source of this line of story came from the fact that an Arab who had been imprisoned claimed that he had a cellmate who confessed to the murder. This cellmate was later released, and actually was released to Jordan before police could investigate him, and he has subsequently died without being investigated. But it seems as if though there's a new line of investigation now that the police are following. We are not allowed to hear anything about it because there has been a ban order, a prohibition order that the court has put on this particular case, which doesn't allow for the publication of information. All we know is that the body was exhumed on Sunday. It was done in coordination with the deceased's family, and that her remains were transferred to the Forensic Medicine Institute at Abu Kabir, south of Tel Aviv. That's what we know at the moment. And so obviously there is something going on in this particular case. And I just hope that for the family's sake, at least, that, you know, they'll be able to know exactly what happened, or that, you know, some action will be taken against somebody who might have been responsible for this. These days, of course, we have DNA testing available to us, which was not available back in 1982. So that may well help the police's case in this particular issue. But a very, very sad story, and one that I hope at least will be resolved, if it's only just to give the members of the family some closure to what was, you know, a very, very harrowing matter for them. And of course, the fact that the police never managed to get on top of it is also not helpful in terms of helping them to close the case.
Unbelievable. I really do hope that they will get some closure here. And finally, a picture of a South African BDS activist prompted an Israeli newspaper to do some investigations into the organization. We were talking about the story a little bit earlier on the show. I think it's a very, very important story. It'll be interesting to see if South African media pick up on it. What are we talking about? What has the newspaper revealed about its findings, Anthony?
Well, there are a few things here. I mean, this obviously is a story that revolves around Mohammed Desai, who is the director of BDS in South Africa. And recently a picture emerged of him shaking hands with a member of the Popular Front of the for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP. Now, this organization, the PFLP, is has been outclassified both in the US and within the European Union as a terrorist organization, as a terrorist entity. So there's absolutely no doubt about the status of the PFLP, and there can be no doubt about the fact that Mohammed Desai was cohorting with them and was actually even tweeting pictures of him shaking hands with members of this organization, even though apparently the tweet was subsequently deleted. And so I haven't seen it, but apparently it was there, and there are some some organizations that have saved the picture.
Yeah, Jerusalem Post has a copy.
Yeah, so on the Jerusalem Post, I've seen a copy of it. But let's be honest, I mean, the PFLP is an organization that in 1974 massacred 25 school children and their teachers. You know, this was in Ma'alot. And they have been responsible for shooting and for rocket and bomb attacks. So there is no doubt that the PFLP is a terror organization, has been classified officially as such. And yet BDS South Africa thinks that this is okay to be not only, you know, holding meetings with them and, you know, supporting this organization, but thinks it's even okay to be publishing on Twitter pictures of people shaking hands of members of this organization. And of course, it's not for the first time that BDS in South Africa is responsible for behavior like this. We all remember the visit that was made to South Africa by Leila Khaled. She, of course, is an absolute terrorist. She was a member of the terrorist cell that hijacked the TWA flight back in 1969. She also participated in the hijacking of an LL flight. And she was hosted by BDS South Africa, and they had fundraising events in order to raise funds for BDS activities, all on the back of Leila Khaled's visit to South Africa. So BDS have shown themselves in South Africa to really want to be involved with terror organizations, which really goes against what BDS originally was set up to do. Let's not forget that the origins of BDS were all about trying to protect the Palestinian people living in the West Bank, to try to oppose the fact that Israel has some administrative control over lands within Judea and Samaria, and was set up as an organization that was really all about economically boycotting products and services that came out of Judea and Samaria, the area, the bits that were produced by Israelis, in order to show their opposition to the fact that Israel has presence within the land that, you know, the BDS organization believes to belong to a Palestinian state, whenever that might be established. So to take it from that point to having activities with known and convicted terrorists, I think is taking things a lot further than what BDS originally intended to do. And it was quite interesting that the Jerusalem Post then decided to go on to the BDS website, the South African BDS website, and to try and make a donation, which apparently they have set up via PayPal. And it's interesting that they were unable to do so. And it's not clear exactly why, because apparently when the Jerusalem Post tried to make this donation, they were given an error message saying that PayPal was not allowing them to make the donation. It's not clear if PayPal have actually taken action on this and have decided to close the account, or if there was some other technical issue. But the fact of the matter is that PayPal is currently not allowing those donations to be made. Mm-hmm. And PayPal have not answered any inquiries as to why this is the case. But we do know that PayPal have in the past taken action against BDS supporting organizations to prevent them from raising funds via PayPal. So I think, you know, this is credit to PayPal on the one hand, and just another exposure of what BDS in South Africa is really about, rather than trying to make positive statements and to take positive actions to support what they consider to be people who need support. Here they are really supporting a lot of negativity, and I think we need to understand that.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Fascinating story. Certainly we're going to follow up on this one and understand and at least try and see as well if South African media are prepared to follow this story. It is relevant. It is very, very relevant, considering that this implicates BDS South Africa in and connects them to this terror organization. It is 8 a.m. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. I'm Harold Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Would love to hear from you on 34519 or 0618951019. Good morning.